Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise. This is the Dr. Denise Show. This is Embrace Your Neurostyle Series Part 2 with Ryan Phillips. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Denise.
We were on a roll, kind of taking us from birth up till age 16 or 17 and sort of setting the stage for some of the ingredients that contributed to some challenges or life experiences that now at this age, you've like full throttle alchemized, and you've been in movies, you've done TED Talks, there's so much that you did with that level of kind of detours. Where would you like to say, like, what along the way, where, like, we just stopped at like age 17. Do you want to give us a quick snapshot of what happened next and then what you did with that energy once you started to be on more of your own thrive path?
Well, I finished off my junior hockey career halfway through my 20-year-old year, where I was offered a pro contract down in the United States of America. And, you know, that was ultimate freedom for me. I had my own apartment. There was basically, you know, no rules, no curfew. But the habits, obviously, that were taken on in junior with the drinking and the culture, they really weren't much different in the professional ranks. And, you know, because of some of the injuries, I was never really able to play up to my full potential. And a lot of those habitual holding patterns, so to speak, with, you know, different coaches and whatnot, you still have a lot of that really deeply ingrained in you, where it's just very unpredictable every time you go, to the rink and whatnot, where, you know, you realize now the business aspect of the game, that you're a commodity. And
absolutely. And in your bio, which people can read, this was at that point where you had some lucrative opportunities from a business standpoint that happened. And, you know, that's kind of like, I have to tell you, I feel like of all the other people at that time, do you want to tell a little bit about what fell into your lap and then what happened next?
Well, I mean, I guess, if you go back in history and you look into, you know, the mid-90s and, you know, playing into the 2000s and whatnot until marijuana became legalized, in North America, it's pretty much legalized, I think, everywhere but two states, all of Canada. It just so happened that the BC bud boom was booming and, indoor grow ops, you name it, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, friends of mine that didn't play hockey had just recently got involved in that business. And, I was a guy that was living down in the States that had connections. The demand was huge, and this is pre 9/11, so it was really easy to get across the border. And a pound of marijuana in Canada back in the day was maybe $2,300 to $2,700 Canadian with the exchange rate when you sold it down the United States. You know, at say 1.32 to up to 1.50 would profit you over $1,000 a pound just in Washington alone. So, you know, do the math, you send down 10 pounds, you're making well over $10,000. And, you know, I was doing that at 20. So,
The crucial scene in one of the links of the movies you sent me.
Right.
You were just like anyone visiting with friends, trying to figure out how am I also going to make some money. And once you did that first marijuana run across the border, it just became very evident in that movie and that spirit of, oh my gosh, this is such an easy way to make cash.
Well, I think it wasn't an easy way. It was like rolling the dice every time, but I didn't even realize the ramifications. It was just, my life was just so fueled on adrenaline in the first place that I guess a lot of that adrenaline intrigued me. And it was like, oh, wow, well, I can make just as much money doing this as I can playing hockey.
Oh,
and it just, my perspective, it just shifted. And
can I just say something? You said something so crucial. Fueled on adrenaline. When our brains are still developing up to age 25, I like to talk about healthy adrenaline rushes versus unhealthy. So it sounds like after that first time you started getting the money, and there was also almost like the thrill. Was there any, at that point in time, the thrill of not getting caught?
I never even thought about getting caught. You know, that it was one of those things, I guess, you know, I was kind of a bit of a pretty boy back then, and I could roll through the border and kind of, you know, I didn't really fit the stereotypical international drug smuggler, so to speak. And, you know, I did take it across myself, not that many times before I realized how lucrative the business was. And I was like, oh, I can build a business on this. And, you know, then got drivers and, you know, found different routes, you know, across the line, that imaginary line, right? So,
okay,
you know,
so I just, can I be a little edgy now? I mean, I mean, I think charisma, you know, my son, like I was just thinking in our break between show one and show two, you know, my son's got such wild genetics. He's such, I love him. I do too. My own like birth family. And my son and I talk about protecting your brain. He's like this businessman and he's got edge. And I'm just thinking how easy it would be for him, or maybe even myself. I think the one thing that people remember is that something like this can happen to anyone. And you were at the time when marijuana was illegal, and the ramifications of the cross country and everything, and you getting caught right at this time of your career. Can you share that? And then like some of your experiences being locked up, but then what you did afterwards. I mean, there's been so many levels of inspiration and also challenge. So I feel like you're like the master of adrenaline rushes, but I feel like right now you're the master of healthy adrenaline rushes.
Well, I mean, thanks for the props, but you know, a lot of people don't see me in bed in my head when I'm going through a little bit of depression, or you know, kind of looking back on those past days, and you know, it wasn't all positive. You know, like I just remember being, you know, at a young age when the money started coming in very large amounts, and just thinking, you know what, this is going to allow me to do whatever the heck I want, whenever the heck I want to do it. And I did. And, you know, obviously, you know, I built a very lucrative business with a lot of people surrounded around me, not just in Canada, but, you know, my sales channels all down in the United States that started in Washington, led down all the way through the West Coast, and then later to the East Coast, you know, like New York and Chicago. And, you know, it just, you know, hockey fell to the wayside, where I just didn't give a damn anymore, because I was making more money than most professional hockey players were, you know, per week. It was, you know, millions of dollars that were coming in. You know, you get blinded by the money, you know, fake friends, fair weather friends, so to speak. And then you throw all the addiction issues into it as well. And, you know, I remember saying to my mom, I said, standing in the kitchen, you know, half snapped, I was like, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to live the best life I possibly can. And the best life at that time was traveling the world and, you know, going to all the biggest and best parties, so to speak. And, you know, I never thought really too far ahead into the future, other than, you know, how much money could fuel that lifestyle. And
I just want to really do say this right now. If you, from what age to what age were you playing hockey? When did you start playing hockey?
Well, I mean, really competitively.
Time you played?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah. On so the ice. Go ahead.
Let's do a discussion about concussion right now.
Sure.
Because when someone, the very first show that I've ever done in the Dr. Denise show was on protecting your brain. And I was fortunate to interview an MMA guy, Gary Goodrich. He's over in Canada. He is like pretty much the face of, you know, post-concussion syndrome. So the reason why I wanted to interview him is I feel like so many people, this was way back in 2016. I think a lot of men, especially athletes, just now there's so much more of a voice in 2022, but just talking about that. And if you were playing hockey from age two until that age, early 20s, right? All of the micro concussions or blunt force trauma that you were having just by doing a regular hockey. And so I think one of the things that's happened with the movie Concussion and with a lot of the athletes and being aware of suicide prevention. When I interviewed Gary Goodrich, he was now on the right combination of meds. He thought about suicide. He has a video showing himself in bed a lot. He's still a friend of mine. He texts and says hello. But what you were doing is for all those years, no one can measure what kind of effect, not only in the very first episode we just did about, you know, some of the childhood kind of the trauma right at birth, some of the neglect, but you had multiple times playing hockey where you could have had some mild brain injury that can lead to different types.
I had a lot of mild brain injuries even before hockey. I mean, I fell out of a tree when I was like 5 or 6 at a buddy's place, and it was a concussion. I was in the hospital for 3 days. You know, who knows how many concussions I took in lacrosse or baseball or whatever, just, you know, taking a dodgeball to the head in elementary school. So I think there was probably a lot of concussions before hockey even started. And, you know, my draft year was probably the worst one I took in hockey. That's when I got hit from behind 7 games into the season, broke my shoulder in 3 places, dislocated it. The shoulder dropped almost half a foot before I got to the bench. I was knocked out cold for, almost a minute. And, you know, everything changed after that hit. You know, the shoulder, the dislocation was treated, but...
What age were you then?
I just turned 17.
Okay.
So...
This is a mental health awareness month, but it's every day for you and I. And essentially a lot of people don't realize, you know, we just kind of assess our feeling state, and depending on what doctor or mental health professional you go to, you can have multiple variables. You can have post-concussion, you can have things that look like mania or depression, but maybe they were triggered by substance use and abuse. And I saw one of your amazing posts on Instagram where it was sort of like a misdiagnosed myth buster. So that's what spurred this kind of part of the discussion with you. Can you weigh in on that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's concussion symptoms. I mean, if you really get into it, and we don't have to get into the whole concussion symptoms here, but
We can take 1 to 2 minutes. I think it's really important because a lot of people aren't educated on it enough. As a doctor, I've seen it present in so many different ways. Not one concussion's alike. It's just like our neurostyle, everyone's perception. So I've seen concussions present in so many different ways and affect people sometimes short amount of times, long amount of times, and then how many other traumas have you had? So that's why I like to just say, how do we protect our brain?
Wear 2 helmets. Instead of 1.
So my son, I want to hear what my son, he was we just did a little show, my son, my teacher, called Protect Your Brain. And I, you know, made sure he knows like your brain keeps developing till age 25. And we were just having a fun talk. But he was like one of the taller kids. And I remember when he was 4 or 5 years old, we were out to a local little hangout that's just burgers and pizza. And he was already being recruited some flag football. It's like the survival of the fittest. Manhattan Beach, dun, 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 looks like a big kid, dun, 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 let's get him on my flag football. And so right away, we did not do that. And then I think through osmosis of the shows I'm doing, my son's made his own choice being educated. It's not that he wouldn't be good at football or good at some sports, but he really wants to protect his brain. He really does, because he gets it and he knows his other genetic predispositions of his learning style. So yeah. I think a lot of kids don't have an awareness. And let's say I grew up in the Midwest in the Chicago area. You know, my dad was always like, don't date anyone that's going to interrupt my sports. So it was a real like football, baseball, hockey, like, and so a lot of times people are just groomed and they're natural athletes, but I don't think we're just getting better now at educating minors, coaches, and parents on the concussion prevention.
Well, I mean, neuroscience has taken such a leap in the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 to 10 years than it did back in those days. And the thing is when you're not treated with the actual thing that happened, then obviously there's going to be ramifications. I had no idea why I couldn't see the puck the same way. I was, you know, my cognitive abilities definitely suffered. And I was like, you know, what the hell is going on here? where my whole perception of, you know, the way the game is played had changed. And so basically, it was like playing the game blind. And, my migraine headaches start kicking in more, and just like,
you were having issues of perception, the way you were playing hockey, balance issues? Were you having mood? You said you had migraine headaches. It presented with a myriad of symptoms for you.
Yeah. And that was very confusing for somebody that had absolutely, no idea or any education on what a concussion actually is. So, I was misdiagnosed with bipolar 7 years ago. Later to find out those were all concussion symptoms. I've had MRIs and SPECT scans, and, you name it. I've been down the mental health gamut, so to speak. And, I've suffered over 50 plus concussions right around there. And, that's just, bang after bang after bang. And you don't have to get hit in the head just to suffer a concussion. You can get hit, on the side of the shoulder that can, still, ring the bell, so to speak. And
I love that. It's a concussion, what I would call a concussion myth buster. So sometimes people, just like when someone thinks of a seizure, they think of a seizure one way. So concussions come in different flavors, different presentations. And so this is also part of protecting your brain. So part one was giving us like 0 to 16 or 17. In this true redemption part, you're not only mentioning that you had a series of events where you got into like a lucrative marijuana smuggling that landed some time in behind bars, but then you had some, you've had quite, you're like a warrior in the sense that you've had many things. Like you think, oh, I got this right diagnosis now, bipolar, it's all going to be okay. And then if your clinician or if the person that's seeing you doesn't ask the right questions, or maybe you forgot that you didn't even associate those things that were like what we don't know about concussions. Like you just said, getting hit on the shoulder or falling out of a tree. If someone doesn't take a fuller loss of consciousness or different types of trauma, this things can go missed and you can end up having the wrong treatment, the wrong doctor. And so I feel like, do you feel like that some of this path of getting the right diagnoses has ignited a big part of your true redemption and all the things you've been doing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, it's if you don't know what's going on and you've been told that you have something that you don't, it kind of throws you for a bit of a mind fuck.
No, absolutely. And it's also, how do you trust? I find that when we're told something, we finally think this is the answer. And maybe that doctor who thought you had bipolar just didn't know. So it's not like they're like, oh, today is going to be the wrong diagnosis, unless they were just not incompetent. And I don't want to make this show all about that, but I want people to feel empowered to get the right type of care for mental health. In fact, I just interviewed a psychiatrist. I think I'm going to launch her show right after this one because it makes sense on are you ready for help and how to get the right help? Because I think a lot of people don't even know where to start when they're suffering.
Well, I didn't know how to ask for help. That was my issue. It's like, first of all, what am I asking help for? I thought I was going a little bit out of my mind with the anxiety and, bouts of depression and whatnot. But that, I attributed that to other, areas of my life. I didn't realize that it was, it was really based around the concussion and trauma. That's what it was based around. So, if I would have known, it would have been approached in a completely different way, which leads me, 7 years down the road. And here I am today talking to you and talking to other people in the world that have experienced, maybe similar situations. I'm just one of the lucky ones that's going to have an opportunity to be able to kind of, get that out into the world, with the help of other people like Charles and, other people that are in my life. So, I don't want people to have to experience, what I had to experience to get to this point where, definite healing crisis, so to speak, I'm still in it, I'm still healing, it's a lifelong journey. It's not something that just goes away. So
I want to do a window into what some of your symptoms are now, but if I can just do, I really feel like I want everyone to know that you're in this moment now looking forward to this work with Charles Maddox, but there's like the day-to-day challenges that you're still having. I just want to, can you give us just a little bit of a window into your TED Talks and also some of the work you've done with raising awareness for mental health with biking? Because you've taken that energy of suffering. And I think this is very important for everyone. You know, I look at it as, I call Earth like the Earth ride.
I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm addicted to the suffering. So that's why I put myself through these situations.
Oh my God. Okay. That's like a whole nother show. Like, okay, I'm going to make note that we might do a whole thing on that. So I know that maybe your neurostyle doesn't want to give yourself a compliment, but I just will say that I think it's amazing how when we go into any sort of life experience and we're just trying to have our best day, I think when we start to master it by educating others, you've done TED Talks, you've also been part of different movies, you also did put so much love into helping others that for a while there, you weren't allowed back in the United States, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So
yeah,
what did you do? Hard. That's a big part of redemption. So yeah, what happened?
That was supposed to happen, but I threw it out to the universe, and I really believe that it could happen. But a lot of changes internally and externally had to happen before that was made a reality. And got out of it by the nick of my teeth, and. I decided that whatever I could do, through my life experience that, I could show that, people could actually make a change. And yeah, which led me I was in Southeast Asia. I rode my bike across Cambodia with, some wonderful people to help with the eradication of human trafficking and child sex slavery. The Department of Homeland Security found out that I was doing that. And they said, hey, one of Canada's biggest international weed smugglers is now doing good. And let's give this guy a break, I guess. And so I was granted, a full pardon to back to the United States of America, where I live so much of my life, where my daughter is. And
if we were live on stage or something, I'd have like fireworks going off going, yay, like hope. I think at those times when you're heart centered, you had no idea that that would ever happen. So do you feel like that energy of service and hope just sort of like, it's like you had no idea that that pardon was going to happen, but like you were doing something from the heart, you were in the place of service. So I just love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I just, when you're in that place of service, everything else becomes secondary. It's just like everything is all about serving.
Absolutely.
And, that's kind of my favorite place to be because it's you kind of lose track of all time and space. And, it was, 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago now where that happened. And, it was like, I wrote on a card that about 2 years previous, to the pardon and whatnot, that it would happen. And so I basically, the principle of self-suggestion, I wrote it on there. I'm so happy and grateful that I'll be allowed back in the United States of America again. Love, faith, on the back. And I just kept reading it over and over and over again. And the more I read it, the more, situations and circumstances started coming into my life to make that happen, so to speak.
So this is a really good universe hack, life hack, neurostyle hack, whether you want to call that alchemy in motion, manifesting, people talk vision boards, mission statements. So the more sensory input we give to anything we want to achieve, and we actually do the work. Sometimes people think, oh, I just have this idea or intention, but then they're not doing the steps to get there. So to me, it's a combination of the linear kind of material work or good habits we need to do with that unseen energy, the non-linear. So when we access kind of our hope, our manifestation, we're always growing. And so it sounds like, when did you start having more of an awareness, or have you always had an awareness to the importance of writing things down or manifesting? When did that start happening for you? Did you have an aha moment?
Probably 11 or so. I remember at 11, I remember driving to hockey practice with my mom, and I was like, Mom, you know that we're the creators of our own reality? And she looked at me like I was crazy. And then I kind of broke it down to her, you know, at such a young age. I'm like, you know, we're always creating our own reality. And she, you know, like I've always been fascinated with the universe and all that kind of stuff from the, you know, before The Secret and all these kind of things
came out. Oh my God, I'm smiling. I'm like so excited. I'm like, ding, ding, ding. We're having a universe geek moment. You know,
funny enough, I end up working with half the people that were on The Secret and met them and whatnot. We're all just people at the end of the day. We're vibrational beings living in a vibrational universe. So, you know, what you put out, you get back in full manifestation. And, you know, I really believe firmly in the principle of auto-suggestion, which is the medium for influencing the subconscious mind. So, you know, with that card that I wrote down and laminated on plastic, you know, I read a book called Think and Grow Rich way back by Napoleon Hill.
Oh yeah, me too.
And it was chapter 3, auto-suggestion. And, you know, I followed those steps to the T and I read that with, you know, I mixed the vibrations of thought with sex, romance, and love.
Nice. And,
you know, I blended those emotions all together, which, you know, really is a direct line to infinite intelligence. And, you know, so, with that being said,
so go ahead. Do you do that? So you're talking about that. And I call it my lapse of love. So at the end of the day, I'm always in the pool, either at nighttime. Right now, I'm trying to stay a little bit out of the sun before I go on a trip, but I always am swimming. And so I pair my fitness workout with different things I want to manifest or intentions I want to send people or prayers. I'll literally call a friend and say, you know, I'm doing a lap. What do you want me to devote this to? And sometimes I just swim to swim. Of course, I don't have it all planned out. So I think that's a really important life hack for people. Yeah. That you can do a moving meditation, whatever your neurostyle is of fitness. Can you share some of your tips, your wellness tips with us right now? And then maybe we can go and you can tell me some about some of your challenges you're going through. We can talk about how to get through that from a mental awareness standpoint. So do you want to start with like the tips of that manifestation?
Well, I mean, God, we're focusing mechanisms at the end of the day. You know, whatever we focus on expands. Whatever we think about, we bring about. It's, you know, so it's, you know, having that, you know, that amplified awareness, you know, being like the observer outside of the physical body and yes. Knowing that, you know, knowing that the greatest forces are intangible and unseen, that we can literally bring, if we can see it in our mind, we can hold it in our hands. And so it's like we're literally molding energy. And,
oh
you know,
my gosh,
so,
do you know what you're you just, know. You know what you're saying? When my little, my son's 13, and when he would have a great idea, I used to tell him, I used to pretend it was coming out of his forehead, like, you know, our area, our pineal gland for intuition. And I promise you, he is like a prophetic manifester. When
well,
he
you
says
know,
he wants things. He's always thinking ahead, but he doesn't just think ahead. He attracts. And I think that this is almost like a whole nother fun show, but I know we'll do that. So can you comment on that? Because my son's in that zone. And
well, I mean,
believe
when you get on the topic of manifestation, I think really you just got to act as though it were and let the unseen become seen. Really.
Perfect.
You know,
so I agree.
If you can get into that feeling aspect of what it is that you'd, you know, truly desire in life or want to see, you know, projected from non-physical into physical, you just really got to act as though it already happened, you know, or it's happening in the present moment. You know, you can't really be focusing on the past if you want something to happen in the future. So even though I've had all these concussions and whatnot, I still believe that the parts of my brain that are working, you know, in optimal, I have to use those portions of my brain to manifest what's going on in my life in the now, and then what's going on into the future so I can be of better service to humanity. And that's what true redemption is all about. It's not about Ryan. I'm just the vessel. I'm just the instrument. I'm the instrument that higher powers are projecting themselves through. And we all are if we allow that, but that's the art of allowing as well. So, you know, we just have to allow that energy to really flow through us and understand that, you know, everything is energy. You know, you look at electricity, you know, like no one really knows what it is or how it works, but it does.
So when you're talking about this, I want to give a specific example of how that works for me, but also how I help my clients. And then I'd like to maybe have you weigh in if this resonates with maybe a day where you might be having some sadness or some feelings of mental challenges, but then alchemizing. So I like to, everything you just said, I'm so in synchrony with. And I like to tell people everything's energy. So when I went to this amazing, amazing UCLA lecture with Dr. Dan Siegel, who's an international adult and child psychiatrist, and Minos Kafatos, who's a quantum physicist, you know, there was a bridge discussion about when we're at that ultimate place of suffering and crisis, there's actually unseen energy of infinite possibility. So when we're in crisis, and if you look across Western medicine, Eastern medicine, all different philosophical backgrounds, this is alluded to. When you go into the suffering, it's also an opportunity if you're aware. So the more we're aware that everything's energy, it doesn't take away the feelings. It doesn't take away the sadness or the anger or the feelings of betrayal. But once we realize, and like you said, we can observe ourselves in that moment and realize, how do we get that energy? What are the tools of the biological, psychological, social, cultural, spiritual, and unseen energy? What are the tools in the toolbox at that moment of now, when we're having that feeling experience, and the more intense the feeling, the more energy there is? How do we shift that into maybe some sadness, into inner peace at that moment? And that could be really simple. Maybe someone's having a sad day or they're feeling depressed and they know it's not going to be a high energy day, but maybe just making a small goal and getting your mind.
Maybe make a small goal of just going for a walk, and it doesn't have to be a fast walk, and it can be just to really just be gentle on yourself. You know, that's the thing in the West here, is we put so much emphasis on, you know, oh, there's the 4 a.m. club, I got to get up at this time and slay the day and do this and do that. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that less is more, and that we got to work smarter, not harder. And, you know,
I just want to go like this. Ready? Ding, 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 ding. I feel like I already know you. Well, I actually talk about less is more. And I agree with you. The more I swim and the more I take mindful pauses throughout my day, and like I was like, even for example, talking with you today on a Sunday, this is going to launch on Tuesday. I got in the space to receive, like, oh my gosh, I get to talk to Ryan. And I'm like, Denise, you've seen his movie, but like, this is the moment of now.
Well, I can make more of a conscious thread of manifestation when I'm in my bed and I close my eyes and I literally just, time is an illusion to me.
I think you and I are blessed,
to be honest with you. It can cause a lot of neurosis when we're putting so much significance on time. So, you know, I really, you know, like to, you know, what I say, you know, dive into the vortex. And, creation for me is really when I, you know, I can attune myself to a frequency, so to speak, and, you know, really pick up on those frequencies of like, okay, well, this is happening instead of it's not happening. And the minute I have any self-doubt whatsoever, I have to reframe my thoughts and my feelings. And, you know, obviously, you know, the subconscious is, you know, 10,000 plus times more powerful than the conscious mind. So when we can actually come to that understanding, we realize that we can tap into that subconscious storehouse, so to speak, and really create from the infinite, which is the infinite now, which is the infinite possibilities that we can actually create from the formless substance.
So I understand those words, but a lot of people, if this is their first time and this isn't their wheelhouse yet, I just like to also break it down with like the golden thread of there are no coincidences. So it sounds like you've really learned how to observe.
You know what? I'm going to steal this from Napoleon Hill. Whatever the mind can achieve and believe, you know, actually whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. So, you know, he broke it down pretty good back in 1937 when he wrote that book, Think and Grow Rich, or when it was published. But I mean, that goes way back to ancient times. It's, the biology of belief, really, at the end of the day. So if you believe
it. I actually want to weigh in on that, because when we're saying the biology of belief, I'd like to, so you've quoted Napoleon Hill, but I really want to thank Bruce Lipton. He is the kind of master of defining epigenetics, and the biology of belief is a book he has. And for everyone, what Ryan's also doing, personally on his journey of wellness and true redemption. You know, in part one, we've heard kind of 0 to 16. Now we're starting to talk bits and pieces of his achievements, but now we're talking about a mindscape, a thought process. And so the biology of belief has to do with, there was old thinking that it was more like a 50-50 genetics plus nurturing. Now we know that our outside environment, which is everything that influences us, our nutrition, our sleep patterns, our environment, any toxins we put into our body, the people we hang out with, the goals that we have, the philanthropy, the physical, the unseen, all of that environmental influence turns on our own unique material DNA to have our own unique optimal thrive. So that's biological, psychological, social, cultural, spiritual, and intuition. And in watching Ryan's movies and things that he's done and the way I'm hearing him talk, he has been able to, doesn't mean he doesn't have the humility of saying, hey, Dr. D, Dr. Denise, I still suffer. But how does he master those moments that where the feeling states are so tough? You've learned so much that your environment and what you tell yourself. So I feel like this Napoleon Hill, thank you, Bruce Lipton, thank you, all the ascended masters, all the teachers before us. But then I, like you, like to put things in action. I don't like to just talk about it. I like to do it. And that's why I was so excited to have you as one of the kind of wrap-up guests for mental health. Because just even thinking about you when you said you were a little bit of a addicted to like pain, and that picture we're going to have of you smiling on the bike. Like, but you've learned how to kind of take it to the next level. And you, right?
What bike ride? I mean, Christ. I mean, I've traversed, I think it's, eight countries now. I look at the bike as a symbol, and, you know, the wheels, you know, the wheel of life. And, you know, the bicycle is always going forward, moving forward in life. And, you know, you realize also as well, when you do these bike rides and whatnot, how much awareness can actually come through action. And I'm an action guy. When I'm not actually in the doing mode of service, you know, I mean, I can be of service on a show. I can be of service, you know, holding a door open for somebody. You know, those are all great things. But, you know, when you really want to get your message out there, I think it's really important to be in the doing mode. Correct. And, you know, that's why I really love film. You know, it can actually, you know, you can show the humility, you can show what you're doing, you can show the emotions, and not make it just about you, because it isn't about me. When I'm doing something, I'm thinking about it's all about we. It's bringing the collective consciousness into unison, so to speak. You know, it's synergy, it's synchronicity. And, you know, when people can connect to you on that level, you know, there's just more opportunities come your way. And, you know, for me, when I do these kind of things, it takes away a lot of the hurt from the past. You know, there was a lot of hurt in hockey, and especially in that business. Yes, it gave me everything I wanted in that time. You know, it gave me the money to travel to over 70 countries in the world and experience all these amazing cultures and whatnot. I mean, I was running that business last 5 years from other countries in the world. You know,
So Ryan, I'm at your speed of riding the bike of everything you just said, but I just want to sort of unpack what you just said. Essentially, we talked about, you know, awareness, then self-love, then altruism. So you were mentioning at different times in this current earth costume or human existence, you've had different levels of awareness.
Earth avatar. Yeah, sure.
Right. So we all, that's why the word neurostyle for me is for all of us. Like, we all process and perceive things in our own unique way, fabulous five intuition, but we're also, time is timeless. It's just man-made, as you know. So we're also on our own ascension path if we choose to be. So even when we have those, what look like roadblocks, I feel like you, and I'm so excited about the TV series, are showing, and this is what I help my clients to do, and also what I do in my media space. I like to show people that even when you're having the most challenging day, how do you get to that place of stability? And I agree with you, less is more. I feel like if you end up finding your moving meditation, you end up having ideas drop into your awareness at a speed that words can't even describe. But then you have to do the work. So it's not just this grandiosity of these like grandiose ideas, but when you have this vision, but you just do the steps. And even when you, I have a faith in a higher power, and I know that people listening have different belief systems, but for me, the highest power is just love, the vibrational frequency of love in the universe. And to me, I bundle God, Buddha, Jesus, Allah, all my ascended, more than even what the mind can say. So I have this statement called love all kind, AKA, and all kind is a multiverse. So when I start talking like that, some people are like, wait, come on, rein it in, Denise, we're doing this talk. Let's hear what he's doing with true redemption. But your mindscape, Ryan, has gone to this place of such unimaginable trauma and suffering, and you've learned how to get to that stability and use the energy on the days when you're suffering the most, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. You nailed her on the head right there. That's for sure. But that's the thing is, it's turning survival mode into thrival mode.
I actually literally talk about that in my book, Mental Health and How to Thrive. So you personally right now, right in this moment of now.
Right this second.
Right this second. No, right this epoch. I call them time epochs. What is your secret? Like gratitude's my secret sauce. What are all the ingredients of your holistic wellness plan for you in this moment of time?
Well, I think in this moment of time, see, a lot of people, they seem to be very grateful when things are going good. we put so much emphasis on good or bad, which I believe there is no good or bad. And there's a lesson to be learned in every moment in time, space, reality. And so, if I'm not feeling so good one day, I send gratitude to that moment. And the next thing it might be a day, it might be two, who knows? But it's literally really, just accepting the moment for exactly what it is in that time, space, reality. And if you don't accept it, then, that causes resistance. And any resistant thought, to me, can actually cause illness, And it's, I'm a huge fan of, Dr. Joe Dispenza, so to speak. If our thoughts can make us well, they can also make us sick as well, too. So, you have to be very, very careful and very aware of what you're thinking in the moment, because what you're thinking is going to create your future reality. And
absolutely. What about, do you have a team like around you of good friends, doctors, treatment?
I do. Yeah, I'm very blessed. I work with a doctor. His name's Dr. Ashkan Jalili. He's, one of the top in his profession at the Canadian Brain Performance Center. And so, we do a lot of work, surrounding around the inflammation that my brain has taken through, multiple concussions. And, I just do the best I can with the resources that are around me. And fortunately enough, I got great people around me right now. I don't have a lot of people around me, but I like it that way because the people around me understand me for who I am. And, so it's like I said, less is more. And, I don't have to have, 50 man crew, that I'm, delegating send marijuana across the border, be a boss man or whatever the heck I am. I can lead in different ways. And I think, one of the cool things about what Charles and I are going to be doing with producing True Redemption is, really showcasing, and intertwining my life story with a lot of, really cool individuals around the planet that have been through similar situations and completely reframing the way we look at mental health and ending the bloody stigma for all, because there should be no stigma around, to me, shouldn't be a stigma around anything in life.
I agree. And we're all here having the human experience and doing the best we can.
Well, it's all about the human experience. And, we're, like I said, you can be having an amazing day and thinking this is the best day of my life. And then all of a sudden you get a phone call and something is maybe not so good. You get some crummy news or whatnot. And I think we, you know, we as human beings don't give ourselves enough credit for the resilience that has been given to us by God. You know, like, you know, he wouldn't put us through, you know, what he puts us through for no purpose.
I completely agree with you. In fact, when I really know my clients really well, and I also check in with what their soul vision is, I really try to meet people where they're at as a doctor. And a lot of times, if you do believe in the concept of the soul, which it sounds like you do, but not everyone's open to that, is that, you know, when we come into this human, it's almost like when someone's had so many events, like, wow, you sure were picking this human lifetime to achieve a lot, because it's all energy to go up your own unique ascension path. It doesn't mean it's not sad. It doesn't mean that I don't think that, oh, traumas are great to experience, but it's what we do with the human suffering. And to me, that's what true redemption's all about.
Yeah, and it's all about post-traumatic growth, right? I think any mental health issue really stems from trauma. Same with addiction. You know, it's like, why did that person drink in the first place? You know, what was the causation to the effect of why that person maybe overconsumed a certain drug or alcohol or pills or whatever? You know, there's always a root cause.
And, absolutely.
You know, everybody's experience is different. And, you know, I'm no better than anybody else in this world. But, you know, I really do firmly believe that I have a divine purpose on this planet. And, you know, my mission in this life, it far transcends hockey, marijuana, you know, even my name,
absolutely. Being said, let's just wrap up a little bit with when are you going to start filming, or can you maybe send me the links to some of the other things you've already produced, the National Geographic. I'll put that in the bio. When are you starting filming, and where can people find you on social media or your website?
Well, social media, Ryan Phillips 888 on Instagram. That's kind of where I'm most active. Not really a Facebook guy at the moment. That'll probably change once True Redemption starts getting filming. Tentatively speaking, Charles and I had a quick little text back and forth. He just got back from Cannes, and we're probably looking at in and around probably between the 15th and the 20th of June. Probably going to be firing off 2 to 3 episodes in Canada, then moving over to the United States. And, you know, rocking and rolling, strutting and strolling, just, you know, getting these stories out there and, you know, just really, you know, sending a message, you know, sending
absolutely
a message that, you know, it's, you know, there's that whole saying, it's okay to not be okay. But at the end of the day, I believe we all are okay. It's just certain situations and setbacks that have happened in our life that, you know, mental illness doesn't have to define you. You define you. You know, mental wellness is where it's at. And I think that should be the goal for everybody right now. And, you know, if you can help just one person in that day, that's a beautiful thing. And,
absolutely.
You know, that's redeeming yourself right there. You know, say if you had a bad day, just go try to help somebody and see how it makes you feel. You know, I always feel better when I'm helping somebody. And
I just want to say thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you for doing a double header. I feel like I know you. I know I've spoken to you. So I just want to thank you, because the words and the way you're saying them are something I believe and resonate with. And I think a lot of people that have listened and tuned into the different shows do. And
well,
I'm really
excited. I believe everything's connected. So we probably met in the higher realms already. So this is already...
Actually, I want to thank Charles Maddox, because Charles found me for doing something 2 years ago. And then we've kept in touch, and he thought you and I needed to meet. So I just want to say that's the magic, the gratitude is my secret sauce. Had I not known Charles, I would not meet you. And so I think if you guys just pay attention to those little everyday happinesses, I couldn't be starting my Sunday in a more exciting way with this time I spent with you. So I just want to thank you for that. And who knows when I'm going to see or talk to you next, but it's a gift. So thank you, Ryan.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thanks. And thanks, Charles. Okay, everyone, get ready for True Redemption. I hope to have you back on. Maybe in the middle of filming, we could do a quick episode.
Absolutely.
And just get the ball rolling. And okay, everyone, have a beautiful day. And also, it's mental health awareness every moment, not just the month of May. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, just want to send my infinite love to anybody that's out there. And if anybody's out there that's struggling, please reach out for help, because that was something that I was very stubborn for a long time to even ask for. And, you know, if you really put it out there and ask with your heart for help, help will come along the way.
Yay. Okay. Thank you, Ryan.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, everyone. You're not alone.
Never.
Ever, ever. I want to have fun now. I want to go on a lazy river now and just like chill out now. Thanks, Ryan.
I'm going to go for a long walk.
Thank you, guys.